Welcome to my session on modernizing your existing wind farms or WPF projects with UWP and .NET Standard. Hi, I'm Walt Richer, and I am a senior staff instructor at LinkedIn Learning. That's the online video training company that is incorporated into the LinkedIn site that you already know. My content team produces hundreds of technology videos every year. I assume that since you're watching this session that you have applications written in WPF or Windows Forms and you're considering how you're going to move or navigate or migrate them to something new in the future. I am an experienced WinForms and WPF developer. I've created many production applications in both of those technologies as well as in technologies like VB Forms and others. And so I've considered these issues at times in the past, and so I think this is relevant. When you're doing desktop development, the change is ever-present in your application development. Now, there's trends come and go over the years and decades, but so these are some of the major trends that you typically see. There's desktop development, there's web development, there is mobile device development, and there's some sort of services. Well, if you have an existing desktop application, you have to decide if you're going to do something new with it, whether you're going to stay in desktop, whether you're going to move to web, whether you do a mobile-only application, or whether you can do a hybrid. So these are things to consider. Microsoft tries to have an answer for these. In the desktop world, there's a lot of different ways of creating desktop applications. There's MFC applications, there is WinForms, of course. There is WPF. There's also support for Win32. For instance, you can still run a VB Forms application written in VB6 on your desktop. And of course, UWP, which is a possible destination for an upgrade for your application, is also considered to be a version of a desktop application. This is why one of the reasons why you should consider it as a possibility moving forward. Now, if you work in corporate development or you have a legacy project, you know that the life cycle of your project and the life cycle of the tools don't always coincide. The operating systems, the developer tools, the frameworks, they change over time. But during that time period, you may be still maintaining or incrementally building on a real-world system. So my experience is consulting on companies that have these big systems, that a lot of these real-world systems have time investments of 7 to 12 years. Now, that's an interesting time frame because if you look at WPF and WinForms, WinForms has been around for approximately 15 years. WPF has been around for 11 years. So if you started building an app 10 years ago, the cycle of changes in all of our tools has certainly changed over those years. You might want to consider some reasons for updating Windows Forms. That's the oldest technology. It's very popular still, but it's the oldest technology. It's using the old GDI rendering or GDI Plus rendering engine, which is about 30 years old. It's hard or impossible to do many things that are considered necessary in a modern application. Things like layering segments or having transparency or cut-throughs. You can't do things like render certain kinds of fonts easily in WinForms. Another thing you see in a lot of modern applications is transitional animations that give your users a sense of where they are in the application. There is no support in WinForms for that. If you want to make it, you either have to buy a third-party tool or you have to build the framework yourself. WPF is the newer of the two. So if you're in a WinForms developer, you actually have a choice of whether I move to WPF or whether I move to UWP. If you are a WPF developer, the upgrade path is stay in WPF or move to UWP. I think the main benefits from a WPF development perspective is if you move, you can start leveraging things easier, some of the Windows 10 features easier, and you get the benefit of working in the Windows Store. Now, both of these platforms are built in .NET. .NET, as you know, is a robust system. There's thousands of .NET libraries. There's tens of thousands of third-party libraries. So if you leave your investment there, you'll be okay. But there are also reasons to move to the new system. So what can we do? If you've made the decision you are going to move forward, what do you do? Well, you can do nothing. Just leave it as is. You could rewrite the entire application in UWP. Now, I'm not going to talk about either one of these approaches today. I'm going to talk about the final two items on this slide. And that is, you can take your existing application and you can turn it into a store application by creating what's called an AppX package. And that essentially makes, another way of thinking of that is it's a UWP installer. And you use something called the desktop bridge to do this. Or you can take your application and start taking sections of it and modernizing them. So one candidate that we'll talk about today is taking your class libraries, your data access layers, your business libraries, and take those out of .NET and move them into .NET Standard. Let's talk about how UWP apps are deployed. So you as a developer create a UWP application. Then you package that application into what's called an AppX package. Right? That AppX package contains all the assets and materials that are needed to put it in the store, to publish it to the store. You then upload that to the store. And then when it's in the store, Microsoft does some verification on it. And one of the things that it does while it's in the store is it compiles it into native binary. So UWP are they're intended to run as native binaries on the operating system. So interestingly enough, that happens on your developer computer, but it also happens when you send it to the store. So basically, you're sending some intermediate code to the store. They compile it there. Now, there's some reasons for that. Check out some Channel 9 videos on why it's done that way. So once you get it to the store and it's compiled, it's then pushed in, out and published so the users can see it, the consumers can find it, and then install it from the store. If you decide that you want to do this, there's a couple ways that you can build an AppX package, even for an existing application. One is you can go, there's some documentation on Microsoft's websites to talk about how to hand build the AppX package. But what we're going to use in this session is the desktop bridge. And it's easy to use, it's very easy to use, and then you get the better install features with this. And then once you've got your app converted and working in the store, then you can slowly start to enhance it. I've been talking a lot about the store so far. What benefits do you get out of the store deploy? I think there's a lot of them here. Apps are available in a centralized store. It's a trusted store. Your users, the consumers, trust it. Apps are licensed across multiple Windows 10 devices. So if I buy an app on this laptop and then I buy a tablet, I'm licensed on both of those devices. It also could be licensed for my Xbox, mobile devices, and so on. And interestingly enough, you can have that app auto-install on new devices. So if I buy this new tablet and I've already purchased six applications, they can automatically install on this tablet. So it's easier to get my computer, my new computer, up to having all the current applications that I use, the Windows Store applications, that is. Benefits are also the apps from the store cannot install adware or malware. They're not allowed to touch the browser, so they can't hijack your homepage or add browser toolbars. There's a thing called automatic background updating. What that means is, as a developer, if I decide to publish a new version of my app, I push it to the store. Now it gets pushed out silently to all of the consumers that have installed my application. And in the background, it will install on their machine. So the next time they open that app, they have their latest version. The downloads from those updated packages are done as deltas. So instead of downloading the entire application again, it just does the delta version of what's new since you published it last time. The user does not need to have administration privileges or use UAC to install the applications. And also very important is that you get a clean install. Uninstall, I should say. You get a clean uninstall, meaning that when you remove it, there's no traces left. There's no hidden registry keys. There is no hidden file stuck in the system somewhere. And I'll talk a little bit how that works with the desktop bridge in just a minute or two. For the developer, you as a developer, if you've built an application, you've probably dealt with installer technology, whether it's Install Shield. I use a tool called InnoSetup. I've used it for years. The point is that is morphing technology too. So you build your application, you build an installer for it, and then 2 years down the road, you do a major update of your application, and you find out the installer technology has changed, and you have to figure out how to change your install package. That doesn't happen in the store. Also, there's less need to support failed installs. The public store is available in approximately 240 markets, and it's accessible for hundreds of millions of Windows 10 devices. Another cool feature, if you're interested, is that you can sell or monetize your app through the store. Now, let's say you, if you're watching this video and you have legacy applications, they're probably business-specific applications, and you don't want those in the public store. So instead, what you can do is publish them to something called the Windows Store for Business and Education. And that means that it's only available to the employees at your company, for instance. Now, both these stores, consumer and the business store, have what's called beta access and targeted distribution. That means when I have a new version of the app, a beta version of it, I can publish it to the store, but I can say, this is not for public consumption, this is only for beta release, and here's a subset of users that are in Windows 10 users that are allowed to have access to the application and install it. At this point, I'd like to show some demo on how to create an AppX package. So when I talk about the store, I'm talking about you have to create an AppX package, which is basically a wrapper around all the assets and resources that you need to put into the store. And we're going to use the desktop bridge to create that. So the first thing we're going to go look at is the Microsoft Store. I'm going to go search the store. I'm looking for desktop app. Scroll down. Here is the app that we're looking for. It's called the Desktop App Converter. You'll take this from the store and install it on your computer. And essentially what this does is it changes PowerShell so that you can use PowerShell scripts to run the desktop app converter. You can see on my machine it's already installed, so I can go ahead and launch it. Now, I need to be an administrator when I'm running this, so since I launched it from the store, it tells me that it says no administrative privilege. So what I need to do is close this window. One more time, it's not closing. There it goes. Go to most used, there it is right here. I'll right click, choose more, and then run as administrator. On the screen, you'll see some instructions on what you need to do, what commands you need to run. Of course, you can always go to PowerShell and ask it the syntax for the commands. Let me switch back to my slides and we can talk about the arguments. So you're going to run this top line, desktopconverter.exe, and there's a bunch of switches that you can pass to it. The first two switches are telling it where to look for the files to put inside the AppX package. So there's two different ways you can do this. If you're using a simple application, say this is a simple exe, or maybe an exe and a couple DLLs, you can use the second option here, which is a slash and then a folder path. And then it'll just take all the files that are in that folder and put them into the AppX package. If you look at this example, this is using a installer, setup application. And you're telling it where that setup exe is. And then one of the caveats of using this tool is your installer has to run with a silent option. So you would pass this argument, installer arguments. Now, each installer technology has different ways. It could be /s, it could, in my case, it's /silent. So you would put that argument here. Next, in the blue, is the metadata, the package name, the package publisher, and whatever version you want to put in the package. And then below are three switches for making to help you in making the package. The first one, make AppX. So in addition to generating all the files and folders, it will also create the AppX file. Verbose means that you want to know more about what's happening during the process of doing the conversion. So that means you'll get a screen that looks like this. The yellow text is all of the log information that's coming out of the converter. And then when you're done running the conversion, you'll see at the bottom, you'll see that it created something called a cert path. And it created this auto-generated CER file, and then it created a folder from packages files and an appx file and a log folder. I'll talk more about those in detail in just a minute. Okay. And then the final one is signing it. One of the interesting things about Windows Store applications is they cannot be installed on a computer, Windows 10 computer, unless they have a digital signature. So when you upload it to the store, Microsoft puts their digital, they sign it with their certificate, so it has their digital signature. Now we're developers, we are doing it on our own computer, we need to have our own certificate. And the nice thing about this tool is it'll auto-generate that certificate for you, and then you can install it on your computer. All right, so let us look at the two applications I'm going to use for this demo. The first example is this pixelsmith.exe file. This is an example I use in some of my LinkedIn Learning courses. So I use it to showcase graphics and how to build a WPF application. And then here I show how to do things like overlays with transparency in the background for this about screen. I talk about how to do effects. So I can apply effects to this picture, including distortion effects. Like that. So it's real simple. It's just got that single executable. So what I would do is I would run the converter, tell it to use that folder, and when I'm done running the converter, I'll have this. So here is my appx file. Here is the logs about the process that just happened. And here is the package files. So this is what's all the extra files. So if you have DLLs and things like that, they'll be in here. So you can see there's just one here, mypixelsmith.exe file, and then some stuff that is needed by Microsoft, these items here. The assets folder, in this case, just contains the graphics that are needed to show this in the various stores and on your live tile and things like that. Okay, so we'll go back here. Now, when I'm ready to install this, I have to install the certificate. So what you do is you right-click, say Install the Certificate. I'm going to install it on my local machine. I'll put it in one store. The store I'll use today is called Trusted People. So I click on Next and then Finish. It tells me the import was successful. Now that certificate is trusted, so when I go to this appx file and run it, it will install it. Now in my case, it's already installed, so it just says PixelSmith UWP is already installed. Here's information about the publisher and the version and what capabilities it uses on my computer. And then I can launch it from here. And you see it looks the same as it did in the other screen. And you'll also see that there is, if I go to the Windows menu, you'll see there's a Windows app. It says Windows app there, not desktop app. Now the second demonstration is a more robust app. That is something called Shazam. Now this is a product that I created about 10 years ago. And it's used by thousands of developers and designers around the world. And it's this is what it looks like. So you see here that when I give this to somebody, when they download it from my website, they get an executable, which is a setup, and they run that setup, and it has to modify some DirectX things. It's a pretty complex setup. So this is a more complex scenario than the PixelSmith version. This is what Shazam looks like. So I'll run the desktop version of the app. The idea behind this application is it allows you as a developer to create custom pixel shaders and use them in WPF or in Silverlight. Okay? So this first screen here shows you the HLSL editor, where you write the pixel shader. And you can see I've got a bunch of sample ones in here. Let's go look in distortions. So I'm currently looking at something called the ripple shader. Here's one called the pinch. And then not only can you write the code and edit it here, but you can also then look at it here and see, well, what happens if I adjust this parameter? How does that affect the pixel shader? I even support animation by clicking on this button. So we'll stop that. And then it also generates the C# and VB code that you need to put into your project. definitely a more complex application, and it's got more complex, it has more complex parts when it's installed. So what I'll do when I run this, when I run the desktop bridge on this, it looks the same, right? There's the appx file, but if you go look in the packages folder, you'll see there's a lot more in here. There's assets. There's my assets for like the start menu and things like that. There is some sample images that I include in the application when I ship it. There is a sample code. This is those shaders I was just looking at a few minutes ago. They're in here. They're distributed as FX files. And more. Now here's two things I want to talk about in just a couple minutes. One is when you run the desktop bridge creates a container. And then it runs the installer inside the container and it monitors everything that happens inside the container to the operating system in there. And then it virtualizes any calls to the registry. You'll see there's this registry dat down here. So now when your application runs from the store, Windows is going to mount this registry changes, let your application call those, and as soon as you shut down your application, it removes those from the registry. It also does the same thing with the virtual file system. Any files that you put on your hard drive that are other than standard Windows locations are placed in here. So for instance, if I go look here, I can see that there are my shortcuts that typically go on the start menu. All right, so let's install this application. I'll go over here. I think the certificate's already installed. We'll find out. I'll double click on the AppX. It says, would you like to install it? I'll say yes. Oh, I don't have the insert. That's what I wanted to make sure. So I don't have the cert. So we'll right click here, install the certificate, go through the same steps I just did. And now I can go here. It says, would I like to install it? And it automatically launched it. And this is the store version of my application, and it works exactly the same. I'll let you try it out. You can see for yourself. I would like to show you that it is showing up here. If I search for Shazam, I'll see it listed as a desktop app, and it's also listed as a store app. One caveat, again, go to Channel 9. There's lots of videos on how to use the desktop bridge. I would like to point out one thing is that because it uses a container, there is a WIM file that you need to install on your computer. So in my case, I'm running... What am I running? I'll check it out here. I am system information on my computer. I'm on build 16299 for Windows. And so you need to have the WIM file for that so that the container matches the operating system. You'll download that from the Microsoft site. Okay. Now, at this point, you have a functional UWP application. There's no difference between it and the original application, except that it's deployed via the store and it is installed via the store and uninstalled through the normal app uninstall procedures. Now, what do we do if we update that application? Let's say that I decide to take Shazam and make some changes to it, add a new feature, add a new shader, something like that. Well, it depends. If I still have users that are on Windows 7, they can't use the store. So what I would do in that case is I would write to the old platform. I'd open up the WPF application to make some changes there. I would publish that using my old installer. Then I would go into the desktop converter and I would update my AppX package for the new release. And that way I'd deploy that to the store. Of course, there are other options. Let's say, here's a good option if you have business class libraries. You got a business application, you got some data access layer, you got some business libraries. What do you do with those libraries? Well, right now they're .NET libraries. Right? We can extend their reach by turning those into .NET standard libraries, and I'll talk more about that in just a few minutes. So what I can do is take my code and convert that to a .NET standard library. And now I've started to, I can then start modifying that new standard library. And then also I might decide whether or not I need to build a new user interface. So maybe at that point I build a universal Windows platform, or UWP application, and start writing some of my UI using that framework. In that case, I can leverage the Windows 10 features and the UWP features, and I'll show you that at the end of this session. So at this point, if you decide that you are going to start doing this extra development, that means you really are no longer just a .NET developer. That means you are a UWP developer. And that means it's time for you to learn about areas that are important in the UWP world. For instance, you might learn what the cool new Windows 10 features are so you can start exploiting those in your application. You need to understand the difference between UWP and .NET development. There is a new package manager that ships with, this was just released a couple months ago, and that is NuGet 3. And I could spend an hour talking about NuGet 3, so I encourage you to learn more about it. But essentially, it's a new way of deploying the packages that works well with .NET Standard and the new features that are Microsoft's building. And going forward, .NET and .NET Core are going to be deployed using this NuGet 3. The other thing you need to learn, of course, is the difference between .NET Standard and .NET Core. So let's talk about .NET Standard. I can't talk about all those topics in the time I have for this session, so let's just talk about .NET Standard 2.0. That's one of the things we like to talk about this week during Connect, is because that .NET Standard 2.0 just came out a couple of weeks ago. Look at this diagram here. In this diagram, we have the classic frameworks that Microsoft produced. So we have the .NET framework in green on the left, and this is what you're currently using. So when you build a Windows Form application using the .NET framework, you're calling into the base class libraries that are part of the .NET framework. Same thing with WPF. If you're building an Android application, you're calling into the monoclass libraries. Now, one of the issues with this scenario is that if I build a class library in monoclass library, it's not callable from WPF. I can't utilize it. Microsoft's had different solutions over the last couple of years to try to solve this. One of those was portable class libraries, but .NET Standard is a replacement for that. So same thing here in .NET Core. If I'm doing UWP or ASP.NET Core, I'm doing what's called core libraries here. I can't use those in either of these other two frameworks. So Microsoft introduced this idea of a .NET Standard library. And this idea here is that you take Microsoft produces a standard and says all the .NET frameworks, this is the target, this is where you want to go with your feature set. And then each of the frameworks decides how to implement those. So the .NET framework can figure out what version to shift over and start using the .NET standard libraries. Now, the benefit here is that if I create a .NET standard library, the red item here, I can call any of the code in there from the .NET framework, my .NET Core applications, and from my Xamarin applications, and more. One of the confusing aspects, at least for me when I first heard about it, was the difference between .NET Core and .NET Standard. And there's a lot of documentation on the Microsoft websites. It's still a bit fuzzy unless you read deeply in there. But the basic idea is .NET Standard is the standard. Think of it as like the interfaces. And then .NET Core is an implementation of that. And .NET Core and .NET Standard are pretty close. They're pretty closely related. So moving forward, if you create a standard library and start moving your code into there, not only can you call it from the gray boxes at the top of the screen, but you can also then reference other libraries. So if you've got an existing .NET Standard library, like a 1.6, you can call that, or a 2.0 there. If you've got an existing portable class library, which is the older technology, you can call that from my standard library. And you can also make calls to existing .NET framework libraries. .NET Standard 2 can reference .NET framework libraries via something called the compatibility shim. Now, the way Microsoft implemented it, they don't have to recompile the old libraries, and that makes it easier for us to start utilizing those prior libraries. It also covers existing NuGet packages. Interesting statistic, 70% of the current NuGet packages are API compatible with .NET Standard 2.0. There's also a lot of new APIs available in .NET Standard 2, about 20,000 more APIs than in the previous version. And that's really important for us, since we're WPF developers or Windows Form developers, because a lot of the classes that we've been using over the last 10 years in our applications were not available in .NET Standard 1.6 and earlier versions. But a larger portion of those are now available in .NET Standard 2. Here are some examples. I won't read this slide to you. The one that's important from my demonstration is the top box, the data box, because I'm going to take a Windows Form application, and that currently uses a data set and a data table and SQL client, and I'm going to convert those libraries into a .NET Standard library. And that's what we'll do now. First thing we'll look at is, we'll go over here to the GitHub repository for .NET Standard, and we're going to go to this section, and we're going to go to the Standard Docs section, and I'm going to look here in versions.md file. So this lists the standard versions, and here is the newest version, .NET Standard 2.0, and these are the frameworks that can call into that. So if I create a .NET Standard Library 2.0, if I have a WPF application that is at least 4.6.1, it can utilize the code in those libraries. So you can see that .NET Core and .NET Standard are at the same version number. If I want to work in mono, then I'd have to get 5.4 for that library. And you look at some of these older versions, you can see that Windows 8.1, Windows Phone, they're not supported by this. Okay, next step is we want to look at the what new features, what new classes are available in this library. And I can do that a couple of ways. I can go back here and I can go to versions, and then I can go to this last one, this diff file here, and then click on view raw. And then I know I'm going to be using data tables, so I can search for that, and I can see that there are several either members or types in here that are data tables. So I can look in here and see what new features are available in .NET Standard 2. But there's a better way, or an easier way, or an automated way to do this. And I'll show you that using this tool from Visual Studio. So I'm going to go to Visual Studio. Here it is. I'm in this project here. And I'm going to show you the original project. This consists of a data access layer. It's got a tours MDF file in it, and I have some issues with my log file. So I have to go here to databases and copy this log file and paste it in here. I'm having some issues with GitHub, so that should work now. Then you see that I've got this tours data set in here. Classic WinForms development. And then my business class library has a testimonials class, a tips class, and a tours. This is for a sample tour operator that does bike tours and things like that around the state of California. That's the idea behind this application. And this is not a well-written set of class libraries. There's a lot of tight coupling between the business layer and the data access layer. For instance, there's a bunch of references to the SQL data table here, which I personally don't think should be in that library, but this is true of a lot of legacy applications, so this makes a good example. So what we are going to do is run this analyzer on this, and I can do that by going to Tools, extensions and updates. It's this one here called .NET Portability Analyzers. I've already installed it, so it's running. Now, this has been around for 3 or 4 years, and Microsoft updates it every time they do versions of their frameworks. And essentially what it does is allow me as a developer to take an existing set of code and then say, how compatible is this current library with this future API I'd like to call? And it'll tell you the percentage of compatibility, and it'll also tell you what parts are not compatible, so what code changes you need to make. So let me go to do this. Switch over to a different branch, and then I'll right-click on this business library, and I'll say run the analyze project portability. And before I do that, let me show you the settings for this. So this is the output. It's going to go in this folder. It's going to be an Excel file. I'm checking to see how compatible this current library is with .NET Core 2, with .NET Standard 2, and with .NET Framework 4.7. But you can see there's other items I could check here. For grins, I can see how backwards compatible it is with 4.0 of the .NET Framework. But I won't do that. Click on OK for that. Then I'll right-click here and choose Analyze Project Portability. It runs the report. I click here to open the spreadsheet. And it's good news. 100% compatible from .NET Core, .NET Framework, and .NET Standard. Right. Let's try it with the data access layer. While it's deciding to close, I'll return back to Visual Studio. I'll return back to Visual Studio, he says, but that doesn't actually happen. Now, let's see, where am I? I'll do the data access layer. So right-click here, choose Analyze. I think this is the right report. Yes, it is. So it's telling me that I'm 99.74% compatible with .NET Core, 100% with .NET Framework, which makes sense. This is a .NET Framework application. And it's a .NET Standard 93.95. And then if I go to this tab, I can see where I'm not compatible. So one of the first things I'm going to need to do is, it doesn't support SQL Client. So I'm going to backfill the SQL Client in this application when I turn it into a standard class library by adding a NuGet package for that. I also have problems, where is it? Right here on line 21, I'm using a strongly typed data adapter, it has a strongly typed table adapters, and that's not supported. So I need to use a NuGet package. Unfortunately, as of today I'm doing this session, that's not available in NuGet yet, so I'll have to use a shim for that. And then the last problem is here, settings base. If you know how connection strings work in Windows Forms, you create a connection string, it's put in your app config file, and then it's read using a settings class, and that's not supported. So what I'll have to do is write a quick little class in my project. So those are the changes I need to make. So let's do that. Let's return back to Visual Studio. Close this report. Close this, all these windows. Go over here. I've already added the project. Now the way you do a standard class library is you choose to add a new project. Go to .NET Standard, pick class library and name it and do all the normal things, save it. Then you end up with this file here. And first things I'm going to do is I'm going to go to these class libraries, and I'm going to change them to the required .NET Framework 4.6.1. Do that for my DAL. And then eventually I'm going to remove these two libraries, and this WinForms app is going to call the new standard class libraries. So I also need to update WinForms to use 4.6.1. That's the most important one for this demonstration. Like that. I should probably show you what it looks like. So I'll press F5 to run the application. It's your classic Windows Forms app using a data source. that's not what I expected to see. Let me go back to the original project. I should be able to run it from here. Okay. Why am I getting this error? Yes, stop debugging. I don't have these built yet. Let me build everything. All right, well, I'll show you the finished project when I get it done. It's basically a Windows Form application that's got a data inside a list box on multiple tabs and also uses the data grid view. Okay, so now that I've got this, I need to copy over some files. So I need to take this database and this data set and move it into my new DAL project. Now it's telling me it won't compile, which makes sense, right? I've got these compatibility issues. You know, if I try to compile now, I get a bunch of errors. They match what we saw over in the spreadsheet. Okay. And so the step here is to go in, right click on this and choose to manage my NuGet packages. Go browse for SQL client. This is the one I want, and install that. Also do the same thing for my business library because of the tight coupling. Now when I compile, I should have less errors. 27 errors, down to 27 errors now. So the next step is to add a reference to something called the dataset extensions. Now this is supposed to be available in NuGet, but it's not ready yet. So someone at Microsoft has created a shim version of this, a .NET standard version of this. I think it's probably the same one that'll end up in the NuGet package, but I've got that available. I'll right click here and choose add reference. We'll go to browse, click on browse here, go to my project, go to referenced assemblies and pick this one here, and then click OK. And I need to do the same thing for the business library. Now how many errors do we have? Okay, so I don't want to move that. What's it doing? Then the next thing I need to add this class. Oh, somehow it's already got the settings class in there. That's why I didn't get the last error. So I won't have to write it. I've been having trouble with GitHub and Git, and when I pull some of my changes over, I'm not getting what I expect to see. In this case, settings shouldn't have been in there because this is the starter version of the starting branch. And it's in there anyway. So what I did here, let's see why I need this one. Let's go over here to Tours data set. This is in the original library. We're going to go to the data set designer. We're going to look for connection string. Actually, I think I'll just look for properties, settings. Here it is. So it's making this. I need a class called tours.net.dil.properties.settings.default, and then I need this property, tours connection string. So that's what I've done over here in the settings class. Is I created a class with that namespace. It's called the settings class that has a nested class inside of it. It's called default. Then I have a property in there called tours connection string, which matches what's over here in app config. That's the name of the tours connection string there. And then I pasted in the connection string from the other application. Okay, and now let's see, I got a successful build. So at this point, I should be able to go over to my Windows Forms application here and look at its references, and I should be able to remove these two references, which are to the old .NET libraries, and add references to my new standard class libraries. Add those two. And I'm getting an error. And that's why we have this done version. I hope this works. I was having issues before the session today, and we'll see. No, how disappointing. Okay, if this demo had worked the way it was supposed to, what would happen is it's compiling correctly up until this last bit. So I take my standard class libraries, I call them from my Windows Form library, and it works exactly the same as it did before. Except now, by putting that code inside the standard class libraries, as I mentioned before, it's callable now from other libraries, other frameworks like Xamarin. So next in this step, we will take a look at turning this into a UWP application. So we'll close this solution. I'll open an existing project. And this update with new features. So what I've done here is let's say we've modernized our class libraries. We got rid of our SQL data adapters and all that other stuff from the Windows Forms, and we turned it into a more modern library. Maybe we're using an Entity Framework, some other tool. So I got this new library that I'm going to be calling from my universal Windows application. Then I go and I create a UWP application, and you do that by right-clicking here and saying I want to add a new project. Select this section called Windows Universal, choose blank app, give it a good name. So now, if you're a Windows Form developer, you're going to be entering the strange yet delightful world of XAML development, where you write your UI using XML markup. And because I only have a few minutes left, let's take a look at how you would do that. So I'll go ahead and load this finished version. And I will make this bigger so you can see it. It's restoring. Yeah. So essentially, what I'm using is a pivot, which is the replacement for tabs in UWP. And then each pivot area has this header. So I've got different pivots, tours, testimonials, and so on. And then I define what's a grid view here. Grid is going to show the data. I create an item template. This is the UI that's wrapped around the data. So I'm declaring a grid with a stack panel, a symbol icon, and here's where I'm doing my data binding. The text property of this text block is filled with an instance of my tour class and the tour name property. And then here I show the description. And then I have two more empty pivots down here. And then in my code behind, press F7 to go there. In my code behind, I create a property here called all tours. And I fill that property's backing variable with a call to my business library. And then I forgot to show one more thing over here in the XAML. Up here, I say item source is all tours. That's property that's on my UWP application. And my I should say on my form. Yeah, I gotta change the startup project. All right, so this is the pivot. Now, it's unfortunate you didn't get to see the Windows format because it basically had a tab across the top. We got tours, tips, and testimonials here. These are the tours that our company offers. And by using this grid, you see these look like little tiles in here. And this is responsive, so if I make it narrower, I see less of the tiles. If I make it wider, I see more of them. Right? So this is something that's really hard to do in WinForms. It's easier to do in WPF. And it's super easy to do in UWP. Now, I've also can customize this even further. For instance, I can do what's called grouping. So I'll do what's called a group output. And what this allows me to do is specify a property on my underlying collection, like say the region area, and then the grid view will group by that. So I decided to group by region. You can see I've got all my north tours listed here. And then as I scroll down, watch what happens when central gets to the top here. It pushes north out of the way. The same thing happens with south. So there's my different areas. So the point here is that the controls that you have available in UWP might be more interesting. They're also, they're fully touch supportive. They work with pen and other devices and controllers as well. And I thought for the last demo, I would show you some of the new features that you might want to consider targeting. So I'm going to look at this one called Send Toast. So the two features I want to look at, there's a huge list of features we could use in Windows. Let me switch back to my PowerPoint briefly. These are some of the cool things that you can do in Windows 10. Get back up on the screen. So push notifications, I'm going to demonstrate that. Voice activation with Cortana, I won't demonstrate that today. Support for mouse, touch, pen, and controller, Hello authentication, and many more. So we'll switch back to the over here. And what's happening here, let's just look at the code in this one button. When you click on this button, I am going to create a toast notification using a template. I'm going to get some of the XML out of that template and add some text to the XML file. Then I'm going to call the toast notification to our manager and we say create create this toast notifier and show the new toast XML. I've also got two other examples here, including one that shows how to change the default sound when the toast is shown. And I've also got some code on this page that shows how to work with the Ink Canvas. Ink Canvas could not be easier. All you need to do is put the Ink Canvas on there and tell it you want to listen for touch, pen, and mouse, and it just works. So this is what the application looks like. Run the application with F5. Click on the Send Toast. Up pops my toast, dismiss it. This one will play a different sound, Send Toast number 3. And then, of course, these show up in the notification center. There's the tour deposit one, there's the tour bus canceled. And then finally, for my last demonstration of this session, the Ink Canvas. Remember, I just put this control on there. I can go over here and use my mouse to draw on it. I can use my finger since I'm on a touchscreen computer. And if I had a pen here on my desk, I could use that as well. So the call for action, my code is available on github.com and then this link here. Remember, it's case-sensitive URL. You can go there and download it. I will say that because it has a database file in there that it can be tricky sometimes to get these to work. You can continue and learn more about this topic and many other topics at LinkedIn Learning. I have a comprehensive Visual Studio series there with about 40 hours of Visual Studio content on 2015 and 2017. Also, don't forget you can always come back to check out these examples, these sessions, and many more here on Channel 9. Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of Connect.